Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. The 2022 salmon and trout season has come to a close, and so for this episode, we are doing a review of the brown trout lakes around the country to find out how the fishing has been, what the conditions were like, and most importantly, what the catch numbers were on the different waters.
Paul Burke is a name that many of you might be familiar with through his 40 plus years with the Inland Fisheries Ireland, as well as his monthly updates to Trout and Salmon magazine. And we thought, who better to give us the roundup on the Irish fly fishing season just gone? And we begin with Lough Shielan.
Lough Shielan started off brightly enough, tough. It has become a very tough lake in recent years. There was a fair bit of fishing on it. Sadly, though, duck fly did not materialise, or people were not using it to catch fish, but they did catch fish. And mainly, if you read some of the reports early in the season, there was a lot of, let's put it this way, people who indulge in fishing lures and minkies and snakes and all sorts of zonkers down deep. And, you know, they're stripping fly line, which is grand. And they got some very, very credible fish. Photographs, plenty of photographs to substantiate that. But a lot of guys who are traditionally fishing what would be similar on carb as a duck fly fishing, maybe did not do as great, you know, in fishing terms. It was slow for anglers who persisted with normal wet fly fishing. But certainly people who would use other tactics like going down deep certainly struck gold, and there was a lot of, you know, fish in the 4 to 5, 6 pound, 7 pound bracket taken that way. And
it's really phenomenal, Paul, isn't it? It's really phenomenal, I should say. Yeah. I mean, it is a lake that does throw up fish in the 4 to 6 pound class.
Yeah.
You know, really, if you want to catch a fish in that class, you know, and I love my carb and everything, but, you know, Shielan is the place to go to.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there. Definitely, there has been, I mean, it's happening, I think, all over the lakes here, but there's definitely a bit of a swing to pull in minkies, humunguses, and things like that. Definitely an early season.
Yeah. In a way, Tom, it's amazing when you talk about Lough Shielan. It's a bit like a lot of anglers now in the greater Dublin area, for instance, who fish Shielan, along with the Cavan anglers and the local anglers there. Many of them, of course, at this time of year, all through the winter, are fishing rainbows on the rainbow fisheries. And to be honest, when they switch over to Shielan, they're fishing similar styles.
It is, yeah. And, you know, the crossover is there, whereas heretofore, you're probably right, Paul. Maybe, you know, 20 years ago, a lot of guys wouldn't have that armory in their fly boxes.
Oh, no. I was working on Lough Shielan back in 1980. I was a pollution officer there for a while. And I saw firsthand, you know, we had proper duck fly, not as good as carb, I have to say, because I've experienced both. But it was very good. I mean, there was a lot of buzzer fishing. Probably one thing that only, I don't know if it happens in carb, you would know it better than me, Tom, would be in Shielan, a lot of different types of buzzers, a lot of different ones.
Yeah.
The main one, of course, would be what we affectionately know it as the duck fly. But there would be a lot of camptos, green ones, you know, and the guy that knew it would know his buzzers and the tyings for those in the various way, the balling buzzer, all of this, scored. And I had some very good fishing myself at that time too, when time allowed, you know.
Grass. And then moving on then, though, Paul, I mean, what Sheelan is known for is mayfly.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the difference, isn't it? When I worked back there in the 1980s, no mayfly.
It was gone, wasn't it?
It was totally gone. The lake was suffering from a lot of slurry, you know, which still goes on to a certain extent. But the only thing is that has happened since then, Tom, which has affected a lot of waters. A lot of trout waters as well as coarse fisheries, and that's the zebra mussel. And the zebra mussel has spread into Sheelan and all the nearby lakes and the Midland trout lakes as well. And it has filtered an awful lot of the, you know, it's clear water now. It's much clearer.
It's really hard to know what it has done. You know, in one respect, yes, it has cleared the water, but in another way, has it affected the food source?
Oh, sure it has to, because if you look at the zebra mussel on the ground in the lake, while it's doing great job filtering the water, it is choking our invertebrates that are on the ground to a large extent. They really clump in their thousands. I'm sure you've seen them on boats that have not been cleaned and whatever. It's just quite incredible how they've, you know, they've done away with even in areas where there's been clean water, where the anodontids and the pearl mussel, which is a huge animal. And yet just by sheer weight of numbers, the zebra mussel will kill them just by choking the life out of them. And sadly, that has happened an awful lot of fly life in our Irish waters.
Do you think it has affected the mayfly yet?
No. If anything, this year and last year and years before on Loch Sheelan, for instance, the mayfly fishing, the hatches of mayfly were terrific. Terrific. Yeah.
So the hatches are still there.
It's like a conundrum in a sense that mayfly can only exist in clean water. I mean, you know. They are the first thing to go if there's any sort of bad pollution in a lake. But there was a difference, a huge difference this year in the year 2022. On Loch Sheelan, the mayfly was scattered from due to weather patterns during it. There was a lot more cold spells and it made fishing very difficult. Last year was a huge difference. Last year, the angling conditions were good and people had phenomenal fishing. Some people had phenomenal fishing. But even though that was happening and people were having extraordinary success at times, this year it was tough. It was much, much tougher. Now, the big ones all were caught. There was fish up to 10 pounds, you know, caught.
Was there?
I know of at least 3 or 4 9-pound plus, you know. And wow. I know.
Amazing.
Yeah. When you consider, like, in reference to Carb, where there is ferox fish, no such fish exists in Sheelan. Mm. These are all your natural trout, you know. Now, you know, I don't know if enough work has been done scientifically to why are fish able to grow to that size. You know, I know Sheelan is very rich in, you know, you know, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. It really is extraordinary. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah, it really is amazing. Now, I had heard as well what affected the spent gnat fishing there. The weather wasn't great, though, Paul, was it?
No, it really... were very cold nights. Most of the spent gnat fishing is evening fishing, most part. And sadly, while daytime temperatures were okay most of the time, there was a lot of wind at times, and it was cold winds. It was cold winds from the Arctic, and certainly it made conditions very, very tough. I mean, I know good anglers that went out there, had bags of fish last year, and this year they were blanking all over the place, you know. They were seeing hatches of fly and falls of spent. But sadly, I don't know what, fish just were not coming like they were to the fly. You know, there was, you earned your fish, and people who got them, they were the lucky ones, but there was an awful lot of blanks. But generally, the fishing mayfly was tough, very, very tough.
After that, then, Paul, how was the rest? Like, because, you know, often hear about the
fishing. I'll tell you.
Good stage fishing on Sheila.
There was some better fishing on Enel during the mayfly.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that. Yeah. How was Enel for? Yeah,
Enel produced some patches of fishing. You know, for the people that know, there's lads there to fish Enel over the years. I know some of them. I've met some of them, and they're very secretive. But let's put it this way: they were doing okay, and they were turning nice fish. Maybe not in the same size range as Sheelan, but let's put it this way, four pounders were common enough during the mayfly to those who knew how to fish it, and that's the problem.
And tell me this, does Enel still get a decent mayfly hatch? Did it this year?
It suffered the same problems as Sheelan. It had the cold nights, etc. The falls of spent were poor, but actually the fishing to the green fly was not bad if you were in the right place at the right time. Don't forget, Enel is not far off the same size as Sheelan. It's slightly smaller, but it's quite a big lake.
Just a thing there now, would it be, and sometimes I wonder this, would it be that there was probably still more fish caught on Sheelan, but because Enel is seen as, should we say, the harder lake, that there's, if there's any fish caught on it at all, people go, wow, catching fish off Enel. Yeah. Is there a bit of that?
There is a bit of that. And, you know, unfortunately, we live in the time of Facebook and the Bush Telegraph and the whole lot. And when somebody hears of a good catch on Sheelan, they're all gone to Sheelan. And they will not touch Enel, you know. I mean, I take my own club in Leixlip. We have a boat on Sheelan and we have a boat on Enel, just in case. You know, Ool as well was fair. Actually, Ool fished probably of the three lakes, and we used to classify in the old days Enel, Ool, and Sheelan as three lakes in the Midlands. That was the, and of course, Derivara, which is not fished too much these days because the trout population is much smaller nowadays. So the Derivara anglers will always sing its praises, and that's great, you know. But
you know, in case you don't know, we have two bucket lists here.
Yes.
Paul, right. Okay. So we've the real, but well, the big bucket list, like based on Patagonia and Iceland.
Yes.
Then we have the small bucket list.
Yes.
And on my small bucket list is to catch trout off Derivara, because I remember reading about Cecil Gibson in one of the books, one of the anthology books. So, and I'm catching a load of fish in it when it was still fishing well. So, yeah, Derivara is on my small bucket list, okay? So, actually, while we're on it there and we're still a bit around mayfly, Arrow, how was Arrow doing?
Arrow was much, well, let's put it this way. Some years I get no reports. This year I actually got quite a few reports on Arrow, that, so much so that I was able to get a few reports into trout and salmon. So, Arrow did all right. It's one of my own favourite lakes, I have to say, during mayfly. I've fished there because I've worked up there just at the right time back in the 80s. I worked in the Arrow area on and off, and I was lucky to experience good mayfly fishing there in the 80s. But this year, local anglers will tell you that this certainly doesn't appear to be as big a population as those years, because it's had some problems with pollution in a lot of the feeder streams, sadly. The lake itself is not too bad, though, and good mayfly hatch and fish in the sort of 3-4 pound range were fairly common, you know, for the reports.
It's
I
a
got.
Lovely lake, actually.
It is.
One of my favourites.
The drifts on Arrow are just something pleasant to fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And
so you'd be inclined to think then, if you're talking about mayfly fishing, not in so far, what you're saying, probably Arrow probably one of the better ones. In what has been a tough year.
Yeah, in what has been a very tough year. I got no reports from Ree or Derek. Now, I know of a few personal fish that I heard just by personal correspondence. There was a few fish caught down in Derek, down in Tipperary, Clare area, but it was generally poor, sadly. And there would have been a fair bit of angling pressure there, local angling pressure, who believe in it. It's all they have, to be honest, unless they go up to you and Corrib, you know. That's. Yeah. But it was poor. But sadly, this year, Ree had some fantastic fishing. Just on the quiet, people were keeping it very close to the chest. If you knew where to go on Ree, being a huge lake, there was absolute monster, Scott. I mean, there was fish. I was able to get the trout and salmon about 3-4 years ago, a fish of 13 pounds on the Mayfly. Yep. Yeah. And that was...
It's probably the only lake that would equal Sheelan.
Oh, yeah.
The size of a fish caught on
the fly. The amount of, because Ree is a mixed fishery, there's a lot of what we would call boggy water, coarse fishing water type stuff. And then off the islands in the middle of the lake, going up towards the top, there are good trout areas. And there still is huge fish, for instance, on the nearby River Innie coming in there. Mm. I know a lot of anglers in the Westmead area who keep that quiet, but the river.
It's funny, actually. You're saying there. Sorry for butting in, but yeah. But it's true, and I understand it. But keeping it quiet is kind of, you know, you can kind of understand it as well.
It is,
in all fairness, you know, yeah. You kind of can. But like, I mean, I think it's up for us as anglers ourselves to go and maybe look at places ourselves sometimes, rather than relying. Like you mentioned, the bush
carrot on a lake like Ree, which is. You can be in a flat calm on Ree, and the next thing, my goodness. Now, I know you have the same thing in Mask and Corrib, no different, but it can be quite dangerous out there on Ree. It's not to be taken lightly. You need, thank God, we've excellent weather services that allow us to be very careful in what we do, you know, because it can be very, very dangerous at times. And sadly, we've had a few casualties, as you know, in Henri.
Yeah, unfortunate.
And Tom, just how was Corrib? I know we touched on this briefly kind of a couple of weeks ago.
I imagine what Paul has heard and what I'm going to say would probably be very much off the same hymn sheet, Paul.
Yeah.
Nothing fantastic coming out of Corrib for this year, or Mask for that matter. So if I was to say to you what my view on the lakes was, Mask fished very well to wet flies earlier on in March, probably April, and then bar for a couple of days sometimes in May, it just became tough from then on to the end of the season. Corrib had little flashes when the weather was right up until May, a reduced hatch of buzzers. It's very interesting that you thought that about the zebra mussel. I do wonder, 15 years ago, we had fantastic buzzer fishing on Corrib. Fantastic buzzer fishing that would last 3, maybe 4 weeks. Doesn't last near as long now. And it was basically the camtoe buzzer. Whether the zebra mussel has an effect on that, that's a complete other story. But definitely, the camtoe fishing wasn't as prolonged. If you hit the hatches right, yeah, you could have. And there was some excellent fishing. Mayfly was tough. That was it. Mayfly was tough. And for the rest of the season, it was tough.
Yeah. And that's been the general thing I've been getting everywhere. It has been generally tough everywhere. There was flashes here and there, as you quite rightly say, Tom. There was periods there in the summer that Ool came alive for a week or two, you know. But sadly, it comes back to the same old problem. We heard it only this week from the EPA, our water quality. Mm. And in our line of work, number of flies on lakes and rivers is way down, way down. I mean, we look at flies, for instance, that Peter Driver and his gang are tying now to show us a different way of fly fishing. on rivers in the main. Now, he does cover lake fishing as well, but, you know, our fly life on lakes and on rivers has dwindled because of our water quality everywhere. The number of olives, you know, you look at the old books, Tom, and look at all the different times for all the different forms of olives that appear on all through the season. They're not there anymore. They're not there anymore, you know. I mean, I was laughed at on the phone the other day, about a month ago, when I rang and it said, I said, no olives at all this in September. No, not to be seen. No, and that was terrible because our lake olives were a huge, we waited for that in August when the fishing would normally get a bit more poor in our lake fishing.
Yeah.
We always had the olives to fall back in September period. On most of our better lakes, we had hatches of olives, but sadly, that's not anymore. It's you know, and it's the same in river. I mean, we're going down. We're using beaded flies now to get the flies down to the fish, because their bottom dwellers are just not coming up.
There's nothing up there. If flies aren't there to bring them up, you have to go to where
they are. Very rarely, very rarely. Oh no, it's not unknown, but it certainly is rarer than it used to be.
Tom and Paul, can I ask you? You know, you both use the word tough for the season. How does it compare in terms of toughness in the last 10, 15, 20 years? Like, how do you...
In one of the poorest years.
Definitely. Yeah, it would be, yeah.
I'll mention it quickly, I did get regular angling reports from Loch Conn. The only problem there was, while there was fish, regularly enough caught on it, the number of rod people actually fishing there from, you know, traveling and catching lots of fish, minimal. I mean, the local anglers are getting a few fish all the time. But
so are you saying the number of rod days we'd be down on Conn?
Yeah. Compared to the old days. I mean,
the numbers. You know, Conn would have been good for giving reports as well at one stage.
And it was good this year. It was good this year, Tom. I mean, I got good accurate reports, but you've got to look at several things. Things go together. When I started fishing Conn back in, I first trout fished with the fly on Loch Conn in 1970. And Dublin trout, I was only out of school, and Dublin trout would go over there and still are going there to fish against the Loch Conn anglers. It's a tradition going back.
Yeah, I know that match.
Years. And they still do it, but the number of fish that they catch is very, you know, very small, both on Conn and Cullen. But and they had made fly, but not of any great, nothing to write home about. But you know, there's two hotels gone there, you know, and I remember those full of anglers there who were taking a break from salmon fishing. And actually fishing on Conn just to do something different, you know.
Can I ask you, Paul and Tom, on this as well, is how do you balance, right, between, you want to tell the truth, right? Things are tough, right? You know, maybe the numbers aren't there, you know, the fly life isn't there, whatever, right? But at the same time, you want to, you know, expound the positives.
Oh yeah.
How do you get that balancing act? Because I presume, you know, I know there's plenty of anglers out there, you know, you hear them all complaining, you know, they're not telling the truth. They're only, you know, exaggerating for their own sake or whatever. But like, it is a tough balancing act, isn't it? Between.
I ask a simple question. The truth I only wish: are all fishermen liars, or do all liars fish? Right. I know it off by heart. Yeah. But it's what you say, Dara. I mean, like, yeah, but like, of course there is. There's always going to be a bit of exaggeration, a bit of embellishment. I think, yeah, it's renowned for it, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, Paul, you're only getting reports. You can, and same with myself, you're only getting reports. I mean, basically you're the messenger.
Yeah. But you can't make up stuff, and I never have. You know, and okay, I might have been accused many times of Oh, you're only telling the good news. You know, I mean, you never tell us if it's terrible, you know. And I suppose I could be sometimes guilty of that. That's, you know, I'm not going to say that the whole, you know, I just don't put it in. There was weeks there that went by and absolutely nothing happened, you know.
Yeah, so nothing went in.
Nothing went in, you know. That was a sign of sad times, you know. It is. I'm sad to say. I go back to what I said to you a minute ago about the water quality. It is. Until things improve.
Well, it's something you said there about the flies, and I always bring it up. And I remember growing up, and when my dad would ever come down from Dublin, he would have to clean the windscreen halfway down.
Yep.
In a summer evening, and clean his headlights. He would actually clean his headlights as well. With all the flies, any summer evening, your windscreen would just become a mass of dead flies. You do not have to do that.
Never
have to do that.
No, I've done enough evening fishing everywhere in the Midlands and wherever, and coming home in the dark, you know, going on to another very important cycle, for instance, for anglers this side of the country, the country in Dublin, the greater Dublin area, who would normally fish the Midland Lakes in July for the Green Peter.
Mm.
This year, virtually none. You know,
I heard it was really poor this year.
You know, I was out in Enel one evening and I saw two green peters on the boat the whole night, and I saw none in the water. And I was just flailing away. What am I doing here? You know.
Do you worry, actually, Paul and Tom, on this, that... Okay, a couple of things on that. One is, how do you encourage more people into the sport when it's tough, right? You know, the whole act of fishing, it's getting harder, okay? That's a scientific fact. But also, secondly, do you worry that anglers, the kind of, not the diehards, because they're always going to be there, right? But the ones who do it, you know, they might, you know, do their annual trip to, you know, for the mayfly, or, you know, they might spend a couple of days fishing during the season. But that you'd worry that they'll start drifting away going, oh, Jesus, it's not, you know, you read about in the UK. Yeah, it's not easy, like, you know.
And the sad thing is, like, I look at my own club here in Leixlip. Years ago, we had a huge junior section. It hardly doesn't exist anymore.
Mm.
It hardly doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, well, we've touched on that before a bit here, actually. Yeah, touched on that before.
I'm in awe of anybody who can get youngsters interested, you know, because it's tough.
But that's like, well, it's hard what you said. If you were trying to bring somebody out there, let's say, for example, you talked about the Green Peter fishing,
yes,
right? You said you bring them out onto Enel. And, of course, you go out and see two Green Peters. And, of course, you'll think there's no fish in it. And it's a lake, actually, we haven't brought up yet. I was going to go on the reports. It's Loch Lean, right? I fish Loch Lean a bit. It's a great lake. Now,
I was going to bring that one up.
Yeah, Peter fishing was really bad in Loch Lean as well this year. But the lake was stuffed with fish, we know. This is a stock fishery, right?
Yeah.
But still, for your Peter fishing, you weren't going to catch fish.
Yeah.
What so basically, you know, it's, I won't say it's cart and horse. I don't know what I'm trying to say is, right, the fish are there, but we need certain conditions to get them up. And
right.
Once you get that, then people have action, and then people will want to fish, right?
Yeah.
So you need conditions. And but then back to what you're saying, Dara, I think what you need is, and we often say it here, every couple of years, what we say in Douros and Cornamona here is, we need a good mayfly.
Mm.
We need a good mayfly. People will come back and they'll put up with tough fishing 1, 2, maybe 3 years. Maybe. But if it keeps going after that, but if they get one good year, they're happy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. It was strange to say that on Lean, for instance, there was too many people fishing at times. There was, yeah. And they were getting rainbows.
Mm.
Very, very few brown trout were caught at all on the very few. Now, there was people who were getting success at my own club And they were telling me, oh, I'm using rainbow tactics. I'm going down deep because fly life, nothing's coming up. So we're going down after them, and we're doing what some of the anglers, as I said to you in the early season on Shielan, they're stripping lures, they're stripping minkies and zonkers and everything like that.
Mm.
That's the name of the game. And the faster you can strip it and whatever and cast a long line and whatever, it all helps. It all helps, you know. And I even hear of people anchoring up where they think they might be, you know, these guys with no lay. See, Lane and Loch of Flynn are easy to fish insofar as they're nice size. You know, they're only a small bay in our big lakes, you know.
I fish Lane quite a bit, actually. Yeah, I like Lane. I think the quality of the fish in it is great. They're growing on. It's actually very, it's beautiful lake. It's very pretty.
It's a beautiful lake, yeah.
It's a great amenity, actually. It's a great amenity.
It is, but it'll only take so much pressure, Tom. You know, the great thing you have on the Corrib and Mask and all these places, and even you have room.
I know. Yeah, boats can disperse.
Hands first, and you know, it's hugely sad, you know.
Tell you that's all this talk of lures and stripping flies, it's reminding me of salmon fish.
There you have it.
Well,
but like, you know, we're even gonna have to redefine the term fly fishing and what you're saying.
Well, yeah, but look, Kabir, look, you know, a Bloody Butcher or Silver Invicta never represented a fly.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I would use in my young days on the River Liffey, I would use those sort of patterns. Every day the ESB used to let out water from Pool of Fuca down the Liffey 5 times a day. Now, when that water came down in a rush, I would switch to a wet fly cast. But there was so many different dry flies, so many olives on various things and sedges in the evening, whatever, that I'd always have 2 rods with me on the Liffey. And I would sort of work a patch on the Liffey, you know, and when the flood came down, out with the wet fly, or what you just said there, the butcher and the fancy flies, as we called them, because they would work. They would
Silver Victor, Butcher, Peter Ross. Yes.
All those. Yeah. And the Black Panel. And all of those. Yeah.
Will we ever see a day, Tom, is this heresy? Tell me. Is this your worst nightmare that car will have to be stocked?
No, Dara. Look.
I don't think so.
The Corrib has...
is what you call proverbially stern.
It is, yeah. My lovely spoon you have there, Dara.
I'm going to get killed for saying this, but my late colleague, Dr. Martin O'Grady, did manage to do a stock assessment on Corrib before he died. And he was able to assess that the Corrib has, because of its excellent network of feeder streams into the lake, has more than enough fish, you know. Sadly, if the fish are down deep and they're not coming, there's not much fly life, they're not going to come up. And that's been the problem, more than the fact that the population is there. You know, it's like Ennell. Ennell, sadly, was grossly polluted back in the 80s by the sewage. Ever after, the fish never really learned to come back up for the fish. They became bottom feeders. We would hate to see Corrib go that way.
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, I don't know.
Actually, just made me think of it there, because I always think, you know, Corrib has great spawning stream, and then the local one too, and we haven't asked you yet, and we did mention it up. Carra. Carra is a lake that I always...
Yes, I've fished Carra a lot, Tom, in the old days. I did.
A beautiful lake, but it's nothing like spawning streams. And Carra, this has got me onto it, Dara. Carra used to be stocked. Carra used to have actually fish cages on it, Paul, didn't it?
That's right.
Cages on it, and it was stocked with takeable fish.
Yes.
But come here, we didn't ask. Reports from Carra this year. Like, I'm close enough to Carra to fish it, but I'm far enough away to be...
No. I haven't heard one report from Carra this year, sadly.
Are you serious? Yeah.
No, I did not. I heard a couple of one-man catch going out there and giving a day on Carra,
right?
And catching lots of small fish, you know. But I mean, it's a lovely, beautiful lake to fish. I've fished it many, many times. And indeed, my own colleagues in the Inland Fisheries Trust, Western Regional Fisheries Board, we often held many of our own staff competitions on carry, you know, and we did very well on it. We did catch, but there was plenty of fly life, Tom. There was plenty of mayfly. There was plenty of other flies.
It's funny, because the mayfly is funny, Darragh. The mayfly's gone from Carrick. Gone. Yeah. Gone. It's gone since the mid-90s. I was lucky enough to fish it, and it was the first time I fished it for one of the last mayfly hatches, and it was phenomenal. I'd never seen anything like it. It was something equivalent like what you'd hear about Sheelan, where the place was just carpeted with it. And I've never seen it on it since.
Why did it disappear?
Probably water quality.
Oh, water quality, definitely.
Specific to what, like?
It could be sewage, could be farming, it could be many.
Can that not be reversed or stopped?
The problem with Carra, probably built up, the water turnover in Carra is very slow. So it built up for a long time. Like the inlet, the inflow and the outflow to Carra is minuscule, as opposed to Corrib, which is huge. If ever you stand on the bridge at the Salmon Weir in Galway and look at the amount of water going out, you'll just be like, God, that's coming out of Corrib. Carra is completely different. And I'm right in saying this, Paul, it built up over time.
It has.
Slowly.
I was lucky enough to be working there and fished Carra in the really good days of the late 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And the mayfly fishing was phenomenal. I actually remember putting up casts of 2 and 3 mayflies on a cast and often taking in 2 fish at a time. Yeah. And I'm not wouldn't be of the same caliber as you, Tom, in terms of, but I'd be okay. I'd be all right, you know, I'd catch a few fish in my good days. Yeah. But no, Carra was a very exciting lake. The fish may not have been bigger, as big as other places, but great fun. Great fun.
Grant, I think I'm just thinking of other lakes than Carra. That's a pity about it. Do you ever get reports from Melvin?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, Melvin. In fact, there was quite a few reports, and I know that because Melvin and the nearby River Drows, I don't write those reports for trout and salmon because a local man writes them there. But I know Melvin was not too bad. Fair Sonahan fishing on it. It hadn't the worst of seasons, certainly. You know, it was pretty good brown trout fishing. I heard quite a bit from Melvin this year. I just kept an eye on it, and certainly it was more lively than what we experienced elsewhere around Ireland, to be honest. It was, there seemed to be fly life, which was,
that was good.
Yeah,
that was good. You never did the reports then for Erne, of course. Erne would have been
no, I did not, because as I say, that was
I was under DEFRA or something.
I would get reports when you're from the Lochs agency, Boyle and whatever, in my days writing on salmon and trout fishing. And those days, they would give me the salmon returns, all right, for the lots of the.
Last lake I wanted to ask you about.
Yes.
Do you ever do much? Because I think it's one of the most beautiful lakes in Ireland to fish in, Loch Lean and Killarney.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever reports there? Would you be doing much? Or?
I tried salmon information and sea trout fishing. Information seemed to be okay. That was fine. I used to get fairly regular, but when it came to the brown trout fishing and Loch Lean and the other lakes there, it was kept very quiet, you know. And I even had the pleasure of fishing with some of them, and I said, Jamie, you know, the brown trout fishing here is not bad from what I've seen. And
it's
not
fish, but it can be really good. Yeah.
Oh, it can be really good. Yeah. I did experience a couple of good days on it indeed myself, which was, it was lively enough. It was lively enough. Yeah.
Paul, you mentioned trout and salmon there.
Yeah.
You must be a thankless task compiling the reports. I can only imagine the amount of chasing you have to do.
But it's a two-way battle sometimes. Most of the time I'm scratching, you know, I'm I'm here with a notebook and I'm taking notes, as well as getting, of course, assistance from my former colleagues in the IFI. I started that off myself back in 1989, and they're carrying it on. They're still taking reports where they can get them. But sadly, this year, unfortunately, there wasn't many reports from the West, which was a pity, you know, but I did get some.
Yeah. And so you were in the IFI pretty much your whole career, was it?
40 years, yeah. I started in 75 and I retired in 2015. Yeah, I'd done my 40 years in 2 days.
Wow.
How is it? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What was the biggest change?
Oh, well, sure. I went through all the different changes. I mean, you know, I started off in the Inland Fisheries Trust. One of the interesting things is I'm one of a dying breed. I bought what was called a life membership of the Inland Fisheries Trust, which today is still in law. If you look at the Inland Fisheries Ireland Act of Parliament, the people who still retain their inland fisheries are entitled to free fishing on the likes of Lough Shielan and Lough Gould and Lough Ennill. I'm still, until I die, I can't pass it on. It dies with me. And I believe, I was talking to one of the ladies in the office, and I think there's about somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 people still. I'd say in the next 10 years, though, I'd say it'll be gone. We had, when legislation was made for the Central and Regional Fisheries Board back in 1980, when Brian Lenehan, senior, was the minister, putting the legislation through the Dáil. And then when Inland Fisheries Ireland was created in the 90s, we had to bring it to the attention of the department that if they dared let any of us not have the rights which we were entitled to, which was, when I bought my life memberships, it was over a week's wages.
40 quid, was it?
Oh, at the worst, it was £20. But that's when we were earning.
Yeah. For some reason, 40 quid is ringing in my mind.
But that was when £10 was £10. I mean,
£10.
All that money, you know. I mean, God almighty, you kidding? Yeah. I mean, you could hire a gilly for 2 quid, for Christ's sake.
You still can't
hire
here.
A boat for 10, 5.
A gilly for 250.
You know, so it was a lot of money.
Paul, tell me this, in your 40 years there, what was the biggest positive you've seen?
I suppose until the 1990s that we had staff, there was people out doing development, there was people doing research, and there was people doing protection. Now, sadly, nearly all staff now in the fishery, in Inland Fisheries Ireland, in the various offices all around the country, they're only doing protection, which I would claim is poor. You know, it's not what it's certainly not what was envisaged in the Act, you know, that we're doing little or no development work, very little.
And is that just a budget issue, you think?
Oh, it's a budget issue and a manpower issue. You know, there's not demand. As I said to you, there's only two people now working the whole Lough Shielan, you know. You look at the value of that fishery, you know, to the state in terms of visitor nights, bed nights, whatever, you know, it's still, while it might have had a very, very tough year this year, a lot of people still come to fish it, you know, even from abroad, you know. You'll always note that if you work in the lake or are fishing there, you will note there's a fair cohort from across the water fishing it, you know, during the mayfly period, you know.
Yeah, I actually fished it a week ago in October.
Yeah.
This place was closed. Actually, I was, you know, yeah. It's great fishery. It's a great fisher, you know, but there's really, yeah, it's like what you say, but like when you hear staffing levels going down to that. So
yeah. And when you consider it, Tom, what's sad is while we've talked earlier in our podcast about zebra mussel, there is still a lot of pig farms around Lough Shielan that need constant monitoring. Those streams where all these fish spawn still need to be cared. As much as carp and mask and all the other fisheries, all these places, you know, you've only to look at the EPA, all these have deteriorated because there's been a lot of house building, And a lot of the sewage treatment plants in all our towns, all around the country, are not up to task. Basically that. There's been a fair bit of other pollution, but not in the same category. The number of houses going up everywhere in all the major centres has contributed to overloading of sewage works, etc.
And again, it's that fine balance, though, isn't it, Paul? That development is needed, but at the same time,
I'm sure you know politically, planning system in this country is not exactly up to the scratch. You know, when it comes to looking at all these things that you know would prevent the building of houses.
Yeah. But you were telling me before, sure, you did survey nearly all the lakes in Connemara. I mean, like we could go on for hours. I mean, particularly me, and so because when I got my first car, Paul,
yes,
I just started with O'Reilly's book and just drove all over through Connemara in my Opel Kadett 619 OIM.
Yeah, yeah.
My blue Opel Kadett, and with my three-piece rod in three sections on the back seat, and just went to every place and some of these places. So yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, but
what I learned in Connemara, Tom, was I was really taken aback. I had fished in the old days with my Kingsman Moor flies or sea trout when there was sea trout in Connemara in their droves. And I enjoyed that in the 70s. And then in the 80s, things started to go a little bit awry. And then in the 90s, it was collapse, you know. But I was lucky enough to do it, to have that, to enjoy that. But what I didn't know until I surveyed the lakes in the middle 80s in Connemara was the range of lakes. I always assumed that, okay, west of the Carb, there was nothing but bog, and there, ergo, there was nothing but poor lakes. You know what I mean? Poor lake. But in the middle of all this, near Clifton and various places, where are these rich trout fisheries? And I couldn't get over. I went into these places. I said, wait, hold on. And then I could see it was back to the Sook, because the Sook showed me so much. I learned so much. There was raised bog right to the banks of the River Sook. But what was underneath that? Pure limestone, pure chalk. So the pH on the River Sook, as well as these other lakes in Connemara, was actually quite rich, even though not all. There was, you know, when you take the lakes near the 12 bends or the 12 pins in Connemara, they would be slightly poorer. There would be, you know, the pH in those would be slightly poorer, and the trout would be consequently smaller, but often were very good salmon or sea trout fisheries in their days, as they were. You know, so you've got a great mix, but a lovely place.
Well, you have a lifetime of stories and memories and insights.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me this, our final question to you. We ask this for everyone.
Yes.
What was your most memorable fish?
Oh. Oh, gosh. I know. Actually, it'll bring me to one other. I would say my big trout last year from Mask. But then this year, that was doubled last month. I presume both of you have seen the fish.
I have actually, yeah.
My goodness. Now that's a fish of a lifetime.
Yeah.
It's a fish of a lifetime. Believe it or not, I wrote a story about the fish to go into December to be told by my editor in Trout and Salmon. We had that story in the November issue. I haven't collected my November issue of Trout and Salmon. The captor of the fish actually put it to Trout and Salmon, sent a photograph and the whole story. So the editor, she said to me, the sub-editor in Trout and Salmon, she said that we won't carry your report in December because it's already been in the no, my big trout. I've never caught a trout that big before, a 10-pounder in Mask, which was wonderful, you know. But,
give us the backstory to it.
Tell us about it.
There is we're really talking about fly fishing, and it wasn't caught on the fly, I'm afraid, which is a pity. Actually, what was the highlight for the trip? Well, the trout, of course, was a huge personal milestone for me. I caught a mid-double pike on Loch Conn on the fly on the same trip. My goodness, Dad, yeah. I know this is heresy to maybe some of the people listening to this podcast. To play that fish just behind the old Pontoon Bridge Hotel, it was the most exhilarating fish I've ever. I've caught brown trout on the fly to 5 or 6 pounds. That's fine, but you know, they were all memorable. Of course, they were memorable. Every one of them were memorable. Of course, they were. You know, but that pike was just, you know, when you see your rod and it's bent in under the keel of the boat, that's getting a bit exciting. You know, it has an adrenaline. I've had the pleasure of catching salmon on the fly up in Conn, actually, years ago. Yeah, I've had a few on the fly on Loch Conn in those days, you know. But
fantastic stories, Paul, and memories and insights into it. Let's hope for a better 2023.
Oh, absolutely. I think Paul will agree with me. There was periods this year. That this extraordinary weather we've had this year really had a bit of an impact on some of our fishing at different stages.
To be honest, Paul, I do agree with you on that. I think the weather had a huge impact on us.
Yeah, I think it did. I really do.
Yeah, but I hate to fall into the trap of solely blaming the weather, but it really did have a huge impact on us.
It did. It's funny, my main editor in Trout and Salmon, he actually spent a few days Canis fishing on Corrib there, and he wrote about it in his editorial 2 months ago, and he said last year he went out with Larry McCarty and he just had a fabulous time. This year he had to absolutely, he got a good fish in the end, but my God, it was a struggle. And he was up at early light and whatever.
As you do.
Yeah. As you do. And he says, by God, it was tough this year. And that's exactly how our season has gone this year. It's tough.
At least anglers, we're eternal optimists, or we very short memories one way or another.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, he went straight back to the same place where he had won a beautiful article in Trout and Salmon the year before of his phenomenal Canis fishing on Loch Corrib. You know, but he couldn't really repeat it. So he just put a couple of lines in his editorial that he still enjoyed it, but by God, it was tough. Just like our brown trout season this year.
Better days will come.
Better.
Le Coulouge.
Paul Burke, thanks very much for joining us.
Not at all. My pleasure.
My thanks to Paul Burke for joining us on the show. And don't forget to rate, review, and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram. And myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday, 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.